This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening to matters of your wallet, balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth. And if you're new to the program, we're really talking about the kind of wealth that money alone just can't buy. Yeah, we're talking about a joy for living. We're talking about something that, with all due respect to the IRS, the U.S. Treasury, and the Franchise Tax Board, or whatever your state happens to be, collecting those taxes that you probably just paid, possibly even wondering, now what exactly am I getting for this dollar? We're talking here about the kind of wealth that money can't buy, and that no tax man can take from you. How's that? This is all tax-free, tax-exempt, all ours to have and develop. And along those lines, we have a great program today. And this is more than simply entertaining, although we'll certainly do our best to keep it entertaining, because why not, right? We get to have some fun as we evolve and as we grow. We get to do that. And with us today is Alex Patakos, also known as Dr. Meaning. And we're going to find out exactly what that meaning is real shortly. He wrote a fantastic book called Prisoners of Our Thoughts. He is also, which is, by the way, based on the work of Dr. Viktor Frankl, who was, as many of you may know, a concentration camp survivor in Nazi Germany, well-known psychiatrist, and wrote truly a classic book called Man's Search for Meaning. And that's really what we're going to be going into today, is having a deeper search of our own meaning. Because when we tap into that, there truly is so much joy in it. There really is. In addition to Alex, we also have with us our winning business segment, and our good friend Hal Adler is joining us. Hal is the president of the Great Place to Work Institute. You may be familiar. They put out their 100 Greatest Places to Work in Fortune magazine every year. And he's going to share with us some of his insights, specifically from their most recent global conference. So we're getting an inside view in terms of what the greatest companies in the world are looking at. But before you get to Alex and Hal, you get this week's Bowl of Stew. Yeah, this week's Bowl of Stew. You know, it's really food for thought, because we are looking very much at the title of this book that Alex Patakos wrote, called a PhD, by the way, which is why he's called Dr. Meaning, called Prisoners of Our Thoughts. And I started thinking, okay, how am I a prisoner of my thoughts? And you know, it's remarkable. I think so many of, by the way, I've mentioned on prior programs that one of my favorite bumper stickers I've ever seen is, don't believe everything you think. Don't believe everything you think. So as I was driving into the studio today, wondering what it is I'm going to talk about with this week's Bowl of Stew. Yeah, surprisingly, not everything is completely scripted out and well in advance. Some of it is actually extemporaneous in the moment. I couldn't help but notice all the different cars on the road. Some of them, you know, I drive a hybrid, a Prius, you know, everything. You see the pickup trucks, you see the Porsche Carreras, you see the BMWs, you see the Daihatsus, and, you know, old cars, new cars. And, you know, I started looking at all of the cars and the drivers, and I noticed how it was so easy for me to create stories about these people. Oh, that guy talking on the cell phone with the gray hair driving the Porsche Carrera. You know, I'm wondering if he's having an affair, and start thinking about all these other things, that this, you know, hard-charging executive is going through some kind of midlife crisis phase. And then I took a look at this. It looked like a Hispanic gentleman driving a pickup truck, and there was all sorts of crap in the back, or seemingly unrelated items and everything. And I started telling myself a story about that. And I started realizing how easy it is for these stories to pop up. It's so easy. And not that I believed any of them necessarily. And I, you know, just like I could only surmise that people seeing me driving this Prius were probably creating a story about me, which may or may not even be true. And then I started taking a look at all the ways I start imprisoning myself, not only in my thoughts of other people, but my thoughts of myself. And I know that we all do that on some level. I'll give you one example from me. Yesterday, I asked my son Nathan, who spent the day before over at a friend's house overnight. And I said, Nathan, we got Little League. Make sure you bring back all your Little League stuff, your mitt and your cleats and all that other stuff. Okay? Make sure you do that because we have another game coming up and you need to have all of it. Sure, Dad. Whatever you say, Dad. You know, the old in one ear, out the other dad thing. So I ask him as we're about to go to Little League, well, where's your stuff? Oh, it's at my friend's house. I forgot it. Well, I blew a fuse. I started dropping F-bombs on this 10-year-old. I got to tell you, that's just the truth. And I started saying, Nate, I am so angry at you. In fact, you know what? I'm not even angry at you. I'm angry at me because I'm judging myself as being a lousy dad right now because somehow I must be irresponsible to have a son who's not being responsible either. And it was interesting, as much as I was really lacing into him, I was telling him I was really lacing into myself. And I was berating myself and beating myself up. Which, oh, by the way, I'm not sure whether you ever do that. A lot of people do. And that is one of the things that I've noticed about myself that I've had a tendency to do. Which, by the way, good news, it does loosen. Especially when you realize what you're doing and you say, is it really true? Is it really true? You know, and cutting myself a little more slack because underneath all of it, there are other thoughts. Because I'm noticing that the thoughts, and maybe you may notice this as well, that your thoughts actually have a hierarchy. Well, some of the thoughts are kind of passing and they don't quite mean as much, but you can go down the line or into the core, whatever direction you want to call it, to come to your most profound truths, which you know are operating in all moments. So as I went to the core of prisoner of our thoughts, in my humble estimation, what I noticed is there's one thought that operates the whole game we live in, to the extent we're calling it a game. You could also call it reality. And that is that somehow we're separate from all that is. And somehow there's an us and them. And just maybe there's only us. There's only one humanity. And if there's something that is infinite, that is all that is, call it energy, call it the unified field, call it, some people actually call it God. Whatever you call that, there is this one infinite thing that we're all a part of. It's inside of us and inside each of us. And I'm noticing when I place my thought on that, that maybe there's this one old story way back when Adam and Eve and eating the apple, and next thing you know, people are running around naked, and now they're all with their fig leaf, and oh my God, I'm ashamed. And we spend the rest of our lives, and the rest of generations somehow apologizing for that inherent imperfection, and that somehow we're to be ashamed of being separate from all that is and separate from each other. So the best we could possibly hope for is some material gain in our lives, which of course for many of us is not the peak of having meaning. So as I went into what the prisoners of our thoughts meant to me, and I noticed that when I focus on my thought is that somehow we're separate from ourselves, separate from each other and separate from all that is, creates a lot of suffering. It creates a lot of self-judgment. It creates a lot of judgment of others. And ultimately, it's not even based in truth. And maybe it's simply we're all fingers on a big old hand here. Yeah, they're all a little different. They're all unique. They all have different meanings, different purposes, different personalities, different talents. And still, we are all on one hand, all interconnected as the hand of humanity. And when we pay attention to that, our lives shift in incredible ways. And it is happening. Just ask Oprah. And also, let's ask Dr. Meaning, because with us here today is Alex Patakos, PhD, who did write this book, Prisoners of Our Thoughts, which crystallized some of mine in the bowl of stew. And let's hear directly from the source right here, whose work in taking from his mentor, Viktor Frankl, who is incredibly well known for his survival of concentration camp in Nazi Germany, and writing one of the definitive books on human awareness called Man's Search for Meaning. And oh, by the way, it's good for women too. With that, here's Dr. Alex Patakas. Alex, thank you so much for joining us on Inside Wealth.
Thank you for inviting me, Stu. Greatly appreciate it.
Well, I also appreciate not only the book that you've written, which can be great in our personal lives, but also professionally. And before we get into the details of your book, how do you define success?
Well, you know, if I link it to obviously the topic that I'd like to bring in, which is meaning, success, just like happiness, and this is not just my thinking, this is Viktor Frankl's thoughts on this topic as well. Success and happiness are both things that one cannot pursue. They're basically the results of focusing on something else, which in the case of our discussion here, it's about things that are meaningful to us, meaningful values, meaningful goals and objectives. By caring about other people, by trying to connect ourselves to something that is really an extension beyond who we are, to self-transcendence quality. And it's from those activities and those efforts, that energy that we put beyond ourselves, that's where success ultimately and happiness as well come from. So, again, it's something that you define for yourself, but it's almost like trying to define profanity. I mean, the Supreme Court once said, well, I really don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. You know, success is something that, just like happiness, you know, it's hard sometimes to define it in the moment and say, well, this is happiness, and so therefore I'm going to be on this quest for happiness just like I would be for success. Oftentimes, the most successful moments in our lives are things that really happened as a result of us not caring about them. They just happened as a result of caring for someone else, of doing a good deed, and so forth.
So you're looking at success as something that's outwardly expressed, or is it something that's more inwardly experienced?
It's actually both. They're both sides of the same coin, but the focus is on the inward expression and the inward meaningful values, and it's really kind of the basis of the will to meaning that maybe I get a chance to describe and that comes out of my book and Viktor Frankl's work. But really, it's that intrinsic motivator as opposed to the extrinsic manifestation. So when we're intrinsically motivated by things that matter to us, then the outward manifestations that occur, they become manifestations of either happiness, success, you know, as we define it. There are other people who we look at them and we say they have all the outward things that we could imagine would be quote-unquote successful, money, you know, material things and so forth, and yet they're clinically depressed.
Mm.
So there's something inside themselves that's missing, and that's really what the meaning it's filling that vacuum, that existential vacuum that Viktor Frankl wrote about, that becomes kind of the basis, the platform from which success and happiness, where they come from. That's what he refers to it as. You don't pursue success or happiness ensue from doing good deeds, from caring for other people, for doing things that really are beyond yourself.
Mm. You know, not many of us know who Viktor Frankl is and your relationship with him. So why don't before we get into your book, why don't you give everybody listening here a little primer on him.
Yes. Well, in a nutshell, Viktor Frankl was a Viennese psychiatrist. He was a physician and neurologist initially, and then he became a psychiatrist. He was a student of Sigmund Freud, as well as a student of another psychiatrist in Vienna called Alfred Adler, who's the father of individual psychology. And Frankl is most well known for the fact that he survived the Holocaust. He survived four Nazi concentration camps, including Auschwitz. His book, as you mentioned, Man's Search for Meaning, has been identified by the Library of Congress as one of the top 10 most important books of the 20th century.
Wow.
He did write 32 books, plus hundreds and hundreds of articles and so forth. His work is profound. There are millions of people have been influenced by Man's Search for Meaning and other works that he's done. But the idea behind Prisoners of Our Thoughts is really to kind of bring more of his philosophy and approach to everyday life, including our everyday work life, so that you don't feel like you've got to be ill or you've got to be in psychotherapy in order to practice these principles.
We're here with Alex Patakos, PhD, who not only studied directly under Viktor Frankl, but is also the principal of the Innovation Group, which is a consulting firm working with companies like Citigroup and ADP and Bristol-Myers, major corporations. So we're taking an application here about search for meaning and actually applying it specifically to work. In fact, we're going to let our sponsors do a little work right now, and we'll be right back with more with Alex Patakos right here on Inside Wealth. I'm Stu Zimmerman, creator of Inside Wealth. Welcome to the movement that takes your wealth to the next level, beyond the surface of money to the service of money, where you get provocative commentary and lively conversation about inside wealth, right here on Talk 910 KNEW. You have a business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net and sponsor radio that makes a difference. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.
Imagine you're lying in your bed stranded because you can't walk. Your friends and family go about their day, but you're left behind. You can't move without dragging your lifeless legs across the ground, stumbling every step, struggling to carry the entire weight of your body on two arms. This is reality for more than 100 million children and adults worldwide. They simply can't afford the one thing that will change everything, a wheelchair. We're the Wheelchair Foundation. We deliver hope, mobility, and freedom to impoverished people across the globe. And now you can be part of this great mission. A small gift from you can buy a brand new wheelchair and set a suffering person free. You won't believe how little it takes. Transform a life instantly. To make a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation.
Call toll free. 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.
Are you looking to help give back to the community but need great flexibility? Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF, has a flexible volunteer position tailored just for you. You can share in the triumph of helping an orphan kitten or puppy, as well as receive unconditional love. ARF needs volunteer fosters to provide a little extra time or attention until these animals can be adopted into their forever homes. ARF will provide the food, medication, and support, and you provide the love. Check out ARF.net or call 925-256-1ARF today. Please give puppies and kittens another chance.
Today, the fastest route to career success is a college degree. And today, the fastest route to your college degree is via the internet at University of Phoenix Online. Designed for working adults, University of Phoenix Online lets you earn your degree when and where you want without interrupting your job or your personal life. At University of Phoenix Online, you'll learn from industry leaders. You'll study with other motivated adults, and you'll complete real-world projects that can help you excel at your current job. Best of all, you can earn your degree in just 2 to 3 years with over 30 degree programs to choose from. Don't wait any longer to start earning your bachelor's or master's degree now. To learn more, call University of Phoenix Online at 877-286-1404. That's 877-286-1404. A better future is as close as your computer. Call today, 877-286-1404.
We have more Inside Wealth and Out right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. We're here with Alex Patakos here on Inside Wealth, who wrote a fantastic book called Prisoners of Our Thoughts, specifically on the principles outlined by Viktor Frankl, who wrote one of the 10 most meaningful books of the 20th century called Man's Search for Meaning. And we're really talking about bringing meaning into the workplace. So, Alex, why don't we get started here and take a look at, you know, one, why did you decide it was important to bring Viktor Frankl's principles into the workplace?
Well, let's think about, and I hope your listeners are thinking about this as well, how much of our lives is spent either in the workplace, at work, or doing some kind of work, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be paid work. It could be volunteer work. You know, we spend most of our waking hours somehow doing some version of work.
Well, so might as well enjoy it and obviously find meaning in it. So I guess that's
absolutely, Absolutely. The other side of it is that our work lives cannot be separated from our personal lives. Even though we try to do that, we try to look at work-life balance. And so if we're really miserable in our work lives, it is going to spill over into our personal lives with our family or friends, our personal health and well-being. So I'm really encouraging people to focus on a healthy workplace and a healthy work life, not just for the purposes of productivity, but more for their health and wellness and those around them.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Actually, we have Hal Adler on later today, and in one of his prior shows from the Great Place to Work Institute, said the number one correlation in their studies of all the indices they look at and what determines a great place to work, the number one indicator is how people respond to the comment, "My employer cares about me as a human being."
Uh-huh.
So it's amazing how simple it becomes in terms of creating that environment. And obviously, having a sense of meaning is everything. In fact, you go on in the book to say that meaning is everything. And it's true whether we drive a bus or run a corporation, that this is really an expression of our body, mind, and spirit. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. Well, you actually touched upon this in your bowl of stew. When you start talking about the fact that how we respond to different situations, ultimately when we dig deep, I refer to it as existential digging, as we dig deep into the core values that really matter the most to us and drive us, is that we do find out that we are connected to the world around us in intimate and really revealing ways. And if you think about logotherapy, which is the form of psychotherapy and the school of thought that Prisons of Our Thoughts tries to bring to the everyday world, logotherapy, actually the word logo in logotherapy means therapy through meaning, but logo actually has ancient Greek definition that actually means spirit or soul. And so part of what Viktor Frankl was trying to do was not just bring meaning to his psychotherapy practice, but he was trying to bring spirituality. He was trying to help people realize that spiritual energy that connects us all can help bring health and wellness to our personal lives and our work lives. And that's a large part of what these principles that I write about try to do.
Mm. We are here with Alex Patakos, who wrote Prisoners of Our Thoughts, as well as an active consultant with the Innovation Group. And Alex, you mentioned that you touched very briefly upon this notion of will to meaning. Can you elaborate on that? Because, I'm not sure everybody understands what that is.
Okay. Well, let me preface that by saying that Viktor Frankl's basic premise is, and mine as well, is that the search for meaning is the primary intrinsic, not extrinsic, but intrinsic motivator of all human beings. So it's not about money. It's not about the extrinsic things that, again, traditionally we define happiness and success with, but it's about what matters inside of us. And so if we think about that as the primary intrinsic motivator, and whether you believe right now, and if you read my book, I'm sure by the time you're done with it, you will believe this, you'll realize that this meaning is really the stuff that drives us. Because when things really start to go bad, we start to disengage. And it's not just in the workplace. We see this with students in schools. We see this with people who are in stressful situations, including crises like, you know, natural disasters and so forth, is that people start to wonder, you know, what's going on with my life, and they feel that their life is coming out of control. The more that we can bring meaning back into focus, the more we will engage. And so in the workplace, for example, I believe, and this is one of the reasons why this is so important to the Innovation Group, is that meaning drives engagement. Employee engagement, engagement with our customers, and so forth. And then engagement is what drives performance and ultimately innovation. So if we can create meaningful experiences at work between our coworkers, with our supervisors, with our customers, with our students, with our patients, you know, wherever we may be working, we're much more likely to perform with passion, and we're much more likely to be creative and innovative.
So the will to meaning is that it starts with each of us to have this this dedication, focus, and willingness to find meaning?
It's the idea that meaning, again, from a logotherapy perspective, meaning is really based on realizing or actualizing values. The more that we can do the kind of value clarification that we used to talk about way back in the 1970s and really understand what are the core things that drive me in my personal relationships, that matter to me with my family. You talked about, say, the relationship with your son, the relationship you have with your coworkers. Those are the core values. to the extent that we can identify and articulate those core values, we want to make sure that those core values, that we are focused on meaningful values, meaningful goals, and that we're authentically committed to those. And so when we find ourselves out of alignment, if our core values are that we really truly believe in mutual respect, and we work in an environment where we're not respecting each other, we're out of sorts. And so we either have to change that environment or we have to change. We have to move on. It's the same thing with our relationships and our families and our friendships and so forth. So the will to meaning, as I define it in Prisons of Our Thoughts, is the authentic commitment to meaningful values and goals. And so we need to understand what are those values, and there are exercises in my book and the work that I do to help us do that. And what are the meaningful goals? And it could be corporate-wide goals. I mean, are they meaningful? If you're a food company, are you committed to, for example, feeding the planet? Are you committed to providing products that are healthy for your customers as opposed to just adding new colors and new flavors that basically are hurting people and promoting, say, unhealthy lifestyles?
Well, it seems to me, as one humble observer of both individuals and corporate activities, that there do seem to be a couple of operating thoughts overlaid upon people's minds. Uh-huh. One is, you know, what's in it for me? Uh-huh. Another is, it's too good to be true. So when we invite people in to consider bringing their, let's say, body, mind, and spirit all together, uh-huh, and all focused and in harmony together, and to have, as you mentioned, this authentic commitment to meaningful goals, a lot of people have somehow been conditioned to believe that that's a luxury item, and that because they're in survival mode in some kind, and it's all about making next quarter's numbers or making the bonus or making the quota, that some of those values get sacrificed.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with you to a certain extent. I mean, obviously the observations that all of us and all your listeners, I mean, we can point to many, many examples where people kind of hang their meaningful values at the door before they enter the workplace, and they hope that they can find meaning when they're back with their families and their hobbies and so forth. And then when they go to work, they're just there driving, you know, and being driven by the bottom line and other, you know, kind of competitive types of things. And I agree with you. The challenge that we have is, to what extent can we take this idea that more and more people, not just the baby boomers, but, you know, the millennial generation, Generation X and Y and so forth, that this really crosses all the different generational divides, they're all looking for something more than just a paycheck, ultimately. And so to the extent that we can help people work in organizations and do meaningful things with their personal and their work lives, they're much more likely, the evidence shows this, to be happier, more fulfilled, and be healthier, and feel that they're doing something that matters. And those kinds of questions, I mean, it's been written about. Megatrends 2010, another book that I can refer to, I mean, pretty well establishes that the search for meaning is one of the megatrends of the 21st century. People want to know, is that all there is? Well, they want more than that. And so I think the idea is, you're absolutely right, we've got an uphill battle. But unless we do the things that I'm proposing and espousing, business will always have a bad name. People will always say, geez, you know, well, I did this for my career, but what I really want to do is something that's meaningful. I mean, ultimately, that has to change. And I think if we can be the vanguard, and I think your program helps to establish kind of a beachhead for this kind of thought, we can help transform the business world so that people respect it in a way that is meaningful.
We're here with Alex Patakos, PhD, author of Prisoners of Our Thoughts, and also the head of the Innovation Group, which has worked with a number of Fortune 500 companies and leading organizations to help them to innovate. And it looks like very much it's through focusing on meaning, which would stimulate engagement and innovation. Alex, are you finding that there are certain age groups? Because some people seem to, you know, that may be more open to this conversation than others, because and the reason why I ask is because some people seem to think that the search for meaning is one of these kind of cycles of maturity issues, where people in their 20s and 30s, you know, they're less focused on meeting possibly and more focused on acquisition or finding out who they are on some other level. And once someone has a little bit of financial success under their belt or something else, kind of climbing up that some kind of hierarchy of needs things, that meaning is at the higher end of the pyramid, and that, you know, kind of survival and acquisition and some other form of material success is at the lower part.
Well, I mean, there's certainly some evidence that would suggest that people who are facing their mortality, they're more obviously looking at, okay, where am I, and again, where do I want to be, and is that all there is, are much more likely to ask these kinds of meaning-focused questions. At the same time, I've seen evidence from people in all age groups, not just people who are retired or close to death checking out, or people who are baby boomers getting ready to retire. All age groups really asking these questions. If you look at some of the younger people, they don't want to just work for a job, you know, for 25 years, get the gold watch and retire. They want to do something that really means, they want to be treated with respect. They want to do something that really makes a difference. So not everybody, you know, is going to necessarily say that the search for meaning is important to them because they've reached a certain age bracket.
We've got a financial situation right now which doesn't look all that pretty by many measures, and people may be losing their jobs. You mentioned Michigan. You know, there's a lot of people out there who may be under financial duress. What can you offer them, or how do you apply the principles in the book when you're up against the financial wall?
Well, I mean, if we think about the most catastrophic situations, I mean, from being in Auschwitz a la Viktor Frankl, or you think about, you know, even Senator John McCain, politics aside, you know, Viktor Frankl was actually, he made reference and acknowledged Viktor Frankl's work on the first page of his autobiography, Faith of My Fathers, because it was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning that helped him survive his experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam, to situations that are less catastrophic but still there all along our personal and work lives, you know, whether it's, you know, having a tough time in the economy, to, you know, having our house burns down, to getting an illness or whatever. Every one of these situations can be put on a continuum from, you know, the most horrific and catastrophic to something that's not so important. You know, we didn't get invited to the prom, say, for example. I don't know. And that, to that person, to that kid, he or she's life, that could be very catastrophic.
Right, devastating, you know?
So, yes. Yeah, it's devastating. So, but the idea is that every one of those situations along that continuum, again, holds within it at least a seed of meaning. And so it's up to us to kind of find out what that is. And so one of the principles, the first principle in my book and the first principle that obviously that Viktor Frankl is most well known for, is that ultimately, whatever the situation may be, we ultimately have the freedom to choose our attitude. And so the first thing I'm recommending that your listeners do is that no matter what the situation is that those of us who believe that the sky is falling, those of us who believe that in our lives the sky is falling. But those of us who say, you know what, I have a can-do attitude, I'm going to get through this, I can turn around and look at the positive of what my situation, no matter how bad it is. I mean, it could be we just had the anniversary, the first anniversary of the massacre at Virginia Tech, and I read an interview with one of the parents who is really trying to celebrate his daughter's life rather than focusing on her death and trying to move on with his family because he has other kids and trying to figure out how to deal with this. I mean, every situation has meaning, and what can he do now to celebrate and to advance his daughter's life? And the idea here is that we lose our job or the situation, the economy is so uncertain. There are meaning seeds in those situations too. And some of us who can take that situation and turn it into some sort of human achievement will become the next Bill Gates or Microsoft or an entrepreneur, or maybe change jobs or careers and move to something else, maybe change locations. I mean, go through retraining. Maybe it'll change the way we relate to our families in a positive, meaningful way. The idea is that if we are open to those opportunities, those windows of opportunity are there for us because there are seeds of meaning in every one of those situations. But those of us who look at it and say, it's my boss's fault, it's the president's fault, it's the economy's fault, or whatever, they're the ones that become prisoners because they're prisoners in their own thoughts, but they're also holding others prisoner in their thoughts. And so they're going to get stuck. So what I'm trying to say here is that this first principle is fundamental to taking action, because part of what we need to do is change our mental mindset so that we can look for those opportunities rather than looking for all the excuses about why we can't do something.
We've kind of bumped up against the time limit here. I want to thank you so much for giving us all the opportunity to have the freedom to choose our attitude and to remind us of that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Please come back. We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco. Will, ownership, trust, appreciation, they all work in the financial world. And they are all keys to security and wealth beyond measure. And it's all in our book, Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, subtitled Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. Hey there, it's me, Stu Zimmerman. Come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net and order your copy today. That's insidewealth.net. We're blowing the doors wide open on Inside Wealth right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. And now it's time for Winning Business. And you know why it's winning business? Because nobody has to lose. Doesn't that feel good? Well, with us today is Hal Adler, the president of A Great Place to Work Institute. And you may be familiar with their work because it's published every year in Fortune magazine in terms of the 100 great places to work in this country, or in the world for that matter. And it's amazing how high a correlation is between that list and how they do in their stock price and how they do vis-a-vis their competition. So it's not just a nice thought of a great place to work. It's actually winning business. So Hal, thanks for joining us again today. And you recently had your sixth annual conference that none of us were invited to. So you want to share with us what we missed?
I would love to. And thanks for the introduction, Stu. Yes, we did. We just came off our sixth annual Great Place to Work conference. This year we were with 700 or so friends and neighbors and colleagues in St. Louis, Missouri. Next year we'll be in Miami at the beginning of May, and you are officially invited to the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you for the reminder that we didn't get you in the invitation list there.
And we have thousands of people as witness right now listening.
Well, good. Visit greatplacetowork.com and to anyone out there that's interested in learning more about the conference and getting there, and meet us in Miami. We'd love to talk with you, hear from you, and share with you what we've been finding, and have these great leaders talk with you about what's happening in their organizations. It's truly a great event. We are just bent on making it better and better every year, and I have to say that this year, our sixth annual, I think we're starting to get it right. I believe that we came off our best yet, and we say that every year, and I'm sure next year will be better still. As I reflect back on it, there are a couple of things that that really kind of stick out. And, you know, I've had the weekend to think on it, and I've had a little bit of time to get into different things back at work, and a few things have really stuck with me over this last week or so. And one thing that we heard about at the very beginning of the conference, it was this idea of self-awareness, organizational awareness and self-awareness. We heard from Google, and they opened the conference with us, they and Wegmans, both number one companies to work for in different years, Wegmans in 2004, and then Google last year and this year. And we heard from Jack DePeter, Senior Vice President of Operations, and from Laszlo Bock, Senior Vice President of Human Resources, in these organizations to kick off the conference. And Laszlo Bock from Google began his short presentation or short introduction by talking about the fact that there are really three things that make Google special, that make Google number one. And he talked about the first thing as self-awareness. He said the number one thing at Google is that we're self-aware. And suddenly I heard the next 2.5 days through that lens of self-awareness. I kind of got fixated on that idea. We've been talking for years. I've been talking for years about organizational qualities being special and unique. But how does an organization achieve those qualities of special and unique? What makes a town hall special in one place and a town hall boring and plain or unattended or uninteresting in another place? Well, that's exactly what Laszlo was talking about, that idea of an organization knowing itself well enough to create a special feeling from something as rudimentary as a cafeteria or a town hall meeting or even an email back and forth for that matter. So I did a little bit of my own research in the last few days about self-awareness and found a definition online to mean the explicit understanding that one exists And furthermore, it includes the concept that one exists as an individual separate from other people. And it was in that, you know, kind of furthermore it includes that I began to think about how organizations differentiate themselves from one another, think of themselves separate from one another, and reflect back on this idea of special and unique. So self-awareness includes the concept that one exists as an individual separate from other people. Well, so does organizational awareness. And organizational awareness, as defined by MIT, had a behavioral competency model drafted in 1996. They define organizational awareness as knowing how to use knowledge of the organization to achieve objectives, knowledge of the stated, prescribed ways of acting, to knowledge of the unstated, informal channels of communication and decision-making. And this is where the rubber meets the road for me. This is what all these organizations are understanding. That which defines their culture, the characteristics, the defining moments, the way people interact, the unspoken, informal, unstated qualities that go beyond the handbooks, go beyond the vision or the values on the wall, and really speak to that unique quality. And when you take a 30,000-foot look at these great organizations, we see things like as simple as these, you know, staff meetings or the health programs or the way they approach training and development as entirely different from one another. And these are the differentiating qualities. These great companies really do take time to reflect on what makes them different, what makes them stand out, not just from a business and a value proposition perspective relative to the market, but also internal. So when you walk into a Google or you walk into a Wegmans, you get distinctly different perspectives of what's driving these cultures, but what you get is, in both cases, very, very clear perspectives of what's driving these cultures. So it starts with the individual, that confidence or that self-awareness and understanding that there's a differentiation between that themselves and others, and maps into an organization. So people in it can tap into those cultural norms, those cultural mores, and involve networks and alliances and people and relationships in planning and problem solving, build support by enlisting support of other people in order to achieve desired objectives or desired initiatives. That's why best companies, among other reasons, but that's why best companies are more successful than industry peers. People get work done not just by the stated kind of network of ways to get through the organization, but also through the unstated, informal ways of getting things done. They understand who to talk with, how to talk with, when to talk with, what to say, how to say it. And It's this culture that drives these results. And coming off two and a half days of interfacing with best companies and leaders in best companies, I'm really looking at the stuff they do on paper and seeing how simple it is. You know, looking at the Edward Jones suggestion box. Edward Jones appeared on the list as number 4 this year. We heard from Jim Weddle. He was one of the keynote speakers. He's the managing director, the equivalent of a CEO in a publicly held firm. Jim Weddle talked about the suggestion box as one of the important ways that information gets exchanged and honesty gets exhibited and conversations happen at Edward Jones. And it really is an amazing process. It really is an amazing practice in their organization. But when you peel the onion back, it's a suggestion box, right? There's nothing new. There's nothing inventive or creative about a suggestion box, but Edward Jones understands itself well enough to make a suggestion box a benchmark practice, something that leaders and organizations around can look at and say, this is special and unique. That's why these organizations are ticking. That's what makes them different.
Hal, thank you so much for condensing 2.5 weeks into a crystallized observation here in terms of self-awareness, because it does seem like it's on more than one level, whether it's the self-awareness of the employees or self-awareness of the organization made up of those employees that is really separates and distinguishes them from their peer group.
True enough. And when you walk through the doors of a best company, you get that. I mean, it's so very clear in the colors they choose to paint the walls and the look and feel of everything from the cubes to the ceiling to the plants to the, you know, in Google it's lava lamps and beanbag chairs, but it doesn't have to be. It's got nothing to do with that. It's the fact that that it works at Google. They understand themselves well enough to say, this is the thing that's conducive to our culture. You don't see that at Edward Jones. At Edward Jones is a very, very different look and feel, but it's specific and it's definitive, and it's very, very clear when you walk through those doors and see what I'm talking about.
Hal, thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Stu. Thanks so much.
So it's really amazing, isn't it, how business is evolving, where more companies are getting, you know, the companies that are most successful out there are actually concerned about self-awareness. Or in the innovation group with Alex Patakos and focusing on meaning in their jobs, which leads directly to engagement and innovation. It's really remarkable. In fact, even here in the Bay Area, we have our own, you know, with Inside Wealth, we also have where the rubber hits the road in the principles of Inside Wealth is with our referral network. And I'd love you to come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net. And check out people like John Menke and Associates and Hutch Ashew at Pillar Financial, because they care and they bring their own sense of meaning and service to their jobs in ways that I know we love to have in all the people we do business with. Wouldn't you like to have people show up every day and whatever it is, whether it's your accountant, an attorney, people at the bank, supermarket, you know, wherever you're showing up, where people have a sense of meaning for being there, a true dedication of service and excellence and a passion for what they do and an attitude where they have actually chosen their attitude, perhaps one of gratitude, but certainly one that is upbeat and optimistic, because, you know, we're living in these amazing times right now. Times of huge, huge change, where so many of us have lived so many years focusing our lives based upon acquiring material goods, where we have used money and the bling as scorecards of our lives, constantly comparing ourselves to other people, you know, whether they're friends or foes or competitors or whoever they are, colleagues, comparing ourselves in some pecking order based upon what car they drive or we drive, how we dress, how they dress, and all these other external things. With very little, and I'll speak for myself in this, very little focus on meaning other than, you know, the meaning of the next piece of bling, which shows that somehow I'm a successful person. And we know that model is disintegrating. No matter how much the media is trying to cling on to that message, it's disintegrating. And it's showing up in every form. And so many people in business now, and this is really a wonderful thing, so many people in business are focused on what's next. And maybe it is, as Alex pointed out, you know, that maybe it does have something to do for so many people. For so many people, it is this sense of mortality, where maybe us baby boomer folks, you know, maybe our friends are getting diagnosed with weird stuff or passing away. Or maybe it's our parents, where we have a deeper sense of, okay, I've been in career for now 20, 30 years or whatever it is. Now what? What's more? Is there something even greater meaning for me to have in my life? Something deeper for me to experience while I'm still here? Or maybe it's for the Gen Y and Gen X kind of people who are looking at this world as it is and say, you know, looking kind of crazed if you ask me, and why is it? Why is it that people continue to pollute the earth? You know, why is it that we continue to focus on, you know, carbon, you know, fuels and as our primary fossil fuels as our primary focus of energy? It doesn't make any sense. Or, you know, why is it that we have to maximize our profits and, you know, and maybe not be telling the truth about our products in the interim? What is it? You know, isn't it time to really take a look at our innermost thoughts and consider that we are prisoners of them? And then we are limited by them. And they do, I won't say it's going to be a concentration camp, but it could certainly cause a lot of suffering for us. To the extent that we focus on ourselves, on what we have, our possessions, as opposed to who we are on the inside, or focus on it's really us and them, and it's a rat race And once again, as Lily Tomlin once said, the problem with the rat race is even if you're winning, you're still a rat. And we're not. We are blessed, actually. Isn't it true? We are blessed to have a greater sense of self-awareness, just as Hal was talking about with some of these great companies. Have an awareness of what they are and who they stand for. And I'm inviting you to do the same, to really take a hard look, because we've been taught a lot about religion. We've been taught a lot about economics, a lot about politics, and we can easily give in to that's the way it is because that's the way it's been. And to have anything so profound, so loving and caring as one humanity, and having enough for everybody if we really focused on it, could easily be too good to be true. That is simply another thought that imprisons us. And rather, as I'm noticing for myself, I'm inviting you to consider for yourself that, in fact, a primary thought is we are one humanity, and there is only us. There is no them. Until next week, invest in yourself, your passions, your purpose, and your planet.
Join us again same time next week on Talk 910 KNEW. And be sure to visit our website at insidewealth.net. Subscribe to our podcast, blog, or learn more about Inside Wealth with Stu Zimmerman. Thanks for listening. Talk 910 KNEW.
It's amazing how little things can make such a big impact in people's lives, like how a 5-inch landmine can rob a woman of her legs, how the tiniest bacteria can paralyze a child forever, or how a small gift from you can give that person a wheelchair, instantly give them mobility, give them dignity, give them hope. There are currently over 100 million children, teens, and adults in desperate need of wheelchairs. Adults who want to go to work so they can feed their family. Children who want to go to school. And a small gift from you can help them get there. Funny how a $75 gift from you can be such a big deal to someone else. To offer a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation today. Smile. You're about to change someone's life forever.
Call toll-free 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.